Healing Modalities of the World. From the preface of Herbal and Traditional Medicine comes the quote, "There have been literally thousands of traditional medicines described in all continents throughout the world." I find it hard to conceive of thousands of healing systems. I have tried below to geographically delineate the systems of the world of which I am aware. I often say that I feel there are hundreds of healing systems still in practice on the planet, treating most of the people. I imagine this is hard for Westerners to conceive, for we have been indoctrinated to think that contemporary Western medicine is not just the only reputable system, but indeed it has evolved from the best that there ever has been. This worldview will be remembered as one of the great myths perpetuated even after hundreds of thousands died yearly from the shortcomings of that philosophy. With some research, one can quickly find out the realities of this viewpoint. But as the old saying goes, it is hard to awaken someone who is pretending to be asleep. There are books and internet resources which cover the history and particulars of most of the healing modalities of the world. In this section, I do not want to take up space rewriting the information that is available. This section, instead, will serve to delineate the healing systems of the world and any personal comments I have to make from my own experience with them. I have had some quality time with over a dozen healing systems and their derivatives around the world. I have been humbled and amazed many times by them, and yet I am reminded by Satish Kumar that the divisions of the mind are not reality. There is no Hinduism, no Christianity, no Buddhism. If we can keep in mind this paradox between the left and right sides of the brain, we can catch a glimpse of the divine. One kind of healer I have spent time with is a Sangoma, as I mentioned earlier. This is a general term for healers with a spiritual focus in Southern Africa. There are hundreds of thousands of Sangomas. Every family is associated with a Sangoma. To think of this as one system would be misleading. I am sure that within the Sangomas there are dozens of prevalent traditions, and in the microcosm each healer is unique. In the macrocosm, there are a lot that unifies us as a species, with many varieties. This is important to keep in our awareness as we delve into this subject deeper. Diversity between and within cultures is quickly being eroded. So much has been lost already. And yet, in my 11 years of visiting with the various native peoples of the world, I have felt greatly enriched. Some of the most important work ahead is listening to the stories from the cultures still with us. My hope is that some of you reading this will feel the call and leave your familiar home to travel foreign lands and engage indigenous peoples of the world so that we, the neo-indigenous, can grow through their wisdom. I pray now that this message gets to you. The true wealth of the planet is vast, way beyond our comprehension. We humans are part of that. What are our roles here? We have many, it seems. James Lovelock always puts forth interesting observations he has made. He recently commented that urination of humans seems to run contrary to evolution's impulse. Perhaps this is true if you look at it competitively, but if you see it cooperatively, an understanding emerges. Though perhaps off-gassing of urea may be easier on humans, our urine of fixed nitrogen as food for plants, fungi, and microorganisms seems to be one of our important contributions. Imagine this. We feed them. And through the cycles of time, it comes back to feed us. Look how many times we do it each day as we move about the garden. I am glad that Dr. Lovelock is still with us at nearly 90. Aho! The time for Western herbalism to rejoin planetary herbalism has come. Why? Because we are needed. In most places I have been, people are ignorant of the weeds around them, and yet their work is to heal us along with the land. Rather, rather than the U.S. needing 50 million farmers, we need 300 million people living closer to the land in their daily life. The plants are our healers and teachers, and they live in one place, yet their seed travels the world and makes home on Gaia wherever they can. We are like plants. We are the seeds. I see all the healing modalities I have encountered as an aspect of plants combined with one of the four elements. Some are primarily based on certain kinds of elements, with special mention of an aspect of the earth or its own category, like metal. The five element philosophy of traditional Chinese medicine deals well with this foundation map of human and universal health. As with the Apollo pictures, we can see for the first time the whole of humanity's healing systems. From these full palette, we can coordinate our Gaian future. Some significant healing modalities of the world. I will present in this section the major healing modalities of the world. This will give you a flavor of the diversity feeding into our future. These represent the healing system serving most of the people on the planet. Each one has its unique plant medicines and treatments. Some have been around thousands of years, some hundreds. For each modality, I offer reflections I have gained from studying these cultures, as well as insights from teachings and readings of the first year of my first year at Schumacher. I have provided references in which you can acquire more knowledge and answer questions that arise. When studying and integrating these systems into our lives, we must remember the cultural context of the modality, as well as the philosophy that underpins the plants and the techniques used. Both the mindset of the healer and the patient, as well as the setting in which the work takes place, supersede the activity of the plant or technique. This is at the core of healing practice. At the center of these healing modalities sit two systems, Ayurveda of India and the traditional Chinese medicine, that are the complex, diverse, and serve over a third of the world. Each is more than 5,000 years old. Each is a world unto itself. Let us start our review of the modalities with these. Ayurveda, the knowledge of life. The Ayurvedic paradigm shows how body, mind, and spirit interactions can be predicted, balanced, improved, to enhance us to live gracefully and harmoniously. Ayurvedic's greatest treasure, however, are its theories of health and disease, which are remarkably compatible with the models espoused by the postmodern medical thinkers. So is quoted from Robert Sobota in his book Ayurveda, Life, Health, and Longevity. I have spent a year of my life in India, from two separate visits there in 1997 and 2004. I am young in my journeys of knowing that world. When I returned from my first journey there and began to tell my stories of India and Ayurveda, I quickly realized that most people knew little of India and had never heard of Ayurveda. That is what prompted me to start writing about my explorations. I cannot begin to do justice in describing this healing system with the word length allocated here. I can only hope that you will take the time to do some research with books I have suggested below and explore as far as you can and as deep as you feel drawn the complexity of this ancient system. For the purpose of this work, see Ayurveda as an ancient 5,000 plus year old codified system of healing with even more ancient roots in a system called Siddha of the southern India and also the Tibetan Ayurveda in the northern Himalayas. Within the Vedas from 2000 BC, you can read about the principles of Ayurvedic medicine and the medicinal uses of herbs, which are contained in the thousands of poetic hymns, as quoted from Van Wyck. If you walk down the streets of the cities of India, you would see many healing systems already to choose from, including Ayurveda, homeopathy, Unani, which is the healing system of the Muslims, Western medicine, and faith healing, Aspects of Ayurveda have made inroads in the U.S. culture through the Maharishi Maharesh Yogi Transcendental Meditation Program. The popularity of yoga, the presence of dozens of ashrams around the country, a few Ayurvedic schools, and some well-known champions of Ayurveda such as Deepak Chopra and Vasant Lad. Ayurvedic cooking has some important contributions to health to make and is making some inroads through yoga programs. My first encounter with Ayurveda was in 1994 with a chiropractor who trained in the Maharishi Ayurveda. He introduced me to the tridoshic system of Vata Pitta Kapha and recommended to me to reflect on my lifestyle and eating habits compared to the recommendations on my prakruti, my birth constitution. I found the ideas he presented fascinating. I later studied Ayurveda in herb school in 1995, and by 1997 I was ready to immerse myself into the extremely difficult and different culture of India for 9 months. I went back again 7 years later for 2 months, and though I do not claim to be an Ayurvedic practitioner, I have embodied this approach into many aspects of my life. The emphasis on digestion and diet, matching lifestyle with constitution, a focus on prevention, and a huge apothecary of herbs and treatments all appeals to me, though I also see some limitation and biases. The cleansing branch called Panchakarma, which means five actions, assists people in releasing chronic conditions and excess ama, toxins. Panchakarma is preceded by palliative actions that prepare the body and followed by rejuvenative actions to reinstate healthy function of the body. There are a large number of famous herbs in the Ayurvedic apothecary and some well-known formulas such as Trifala, Chavanprash, and Trikatu. Some of these well-known herbs include Ashwagandha, Shatavari, Pipali, Brahmi, Amalaki, and Neem. Books to read include all the books by Robert Svoboda and Vasant Lad. Also, look into the books The Yoga of Herbs and Planetary Herbology, which both have sections and discuss them in detail. Next, we come to the Chinese healing modality. No other medical system deserves the title traditional more than Chinese medicine, says Monte in his book World Medicine. Modern Western medicine, which we often refer to as traditional, is only 2 centuries old. Chinese medicine, on the other hand, is at least 3,000 years old and is still being used to treat tens of millions of people in China and other places around the world. Chinese medicine is based on that view that humanity is a part of a larger creation, a greater body that is the universe itself. Each of us is subject to the same laws that govern the stars, the planets, the trees, and the soil. World medicine. When I researched this ancient culture, I was surprised by all the ambiguous information about the healing arts in China. What adds to the confusion for me is that I have not been to China, so I need to rely on stories to form an image of not only the history of Chinese medicine, but also on the contemporary situation. Nonetheless, it is apparent to me that Chinese medicine will continue to contribute fundamentally to the healing systems of the world. Fortunately, the modern Chinese medicine system has made huge inroads into the American culture these last 30 years through dozens of colleges, notably Thai Sophia of Maryland, which was one of the first to be accredited back in 1974, I believe. With this interest has come a number of books describing this system on the Western mind. For thousands of years, says Dennis Kupchuk in the Web That Has No Weaver, for thousands of years, the Chinese have observed life processes and the relationships between man and his environment. From this observation, the art of Chinese medicine has developed vocabulary to describe the myriad subtle body patterns, a method of description not available to Western medicine because of its emphasis on disease states. The Chinese approach is a more holistic consideration of health and disease and of the delicate interplay between these opposing forces. Robert Dugan founder of Thai Sophia Institute, challenges the whole notion of systems of healing as an abstraction. He speaks of how traditional Chinese medicine is really the story of thousands of people who stick needles in people and gave them herbs to eat. He emphasizes that to take those stories and conceptualize them, looking for common patterns, is an abstraction which can lead us astray from reality. Henry Bortoff spoke of this as the common state of modern living, where we live downstream of reality in counterfeit wholes. There are clear, comprehensive descriptions of the history and details of Chinese medicine. See books mentioned below. It is a complex history with a significant shift in the last 59 years with the coming of the Cultural Revolution. One aspect of that was Mao Zedong stripping Chinese medicine down to a Western approach with herbs and needles. Michael Tierra writes, "Since the Chinese Revolution, Chinese medicine has tended to eliminate the psychological and spiritual components of healing, emphasizing the efficient and effective treatment of physical symptoms. Though this has been effective at bringing traditional Chinese medicine into the Western world, we mustn't forget the energetic aspects that have been presented to the West in the form of Worsley's five-element approach. For the purpose of this work, it behooves us to consider the contributions of both ways as well as other approaches found around vast China as our cultures intermingle more and more. I intend to visit southern China in the next couple of years as part of my studies of plant genera around the world. I do not want to attempt here to summarize Chinese medicine in any comprehensive way. Instead, let me put out a roadmap with significant points to ponder. Within the one is the duality of yin and yang, followed by the five elements. This is at the core of TCM and five-element theory. Within this system's model of the human body, there are very different meanings to the word organs that are connected to each other by meridians. Digestion is governed by the triple burner, and within the kidney organ, there are energetic centers containing Jing, birth energy, Shen, spirit energy, and Qi, spelt many ways, Qi, Chi, and Ki, the life force energy. This system has very different definitions of blood and other fluids. These qualities can be experienced and shifted in many ways, including acupuncture, herbal medicines, and or burning herbs in moxibustion. The sheer breadth and depth of Chinese medicine holds its place as a cornerstone in ensuring our collective health. The most complete reference to Chinese medicine came out recently in 1977, according to Van Wyck, that listed 6,000 drugs, with 4,800 of them being of plant origin. I have many questions about TCM, especially regarding how they process herbs and make medicines. I aim to find out much more when I am there. It will be a busy time meeting the genera of plants and witnessing the rural and urban cultures. What do they eat? What medicines do they use? Well, who do they go to for healing? Do they all do Tai Chi in the morning? These and other questions will be asked as I journey through that country. There are other healing systems in China and around the Orient, including the Korean traditional medicine and the Japanese traditional medicine, which is called Kampo, K-A-M-P-O. But I know little about them. Some significant herbs I use and recommend include medicinal mushrooms like shiitake, turkey tail, lingzhi, ginseng, dong quai, jiaogulong, jujube, codenopsis, hoshu wu, astragalus, romania, to name a few. Some argue that yin chao is the most consumed medicine formula on earth. Books to look into in addition to those mentioned include Planetary Herbology, Herbs for Life, Between Heaven and Earth, and Healing with Whole Foods. Now we come to Western herbalism. This is also known under many other different names. And so under the title Western Herbalisms, I want to include Galenic medicine, humoral medicine, Greek medicine, and traditional European medicine. All these are aspects and nuances of Western herbalism. Remarkably, Western herbalism, all of Western culture actually, traces its roots to the Greek civilization. In my education, at least, it was implied that the Greeks were the oldest, most advanced civilization, and that the rest of the world was barbaric and primitive. As you have seen above in the discussions of herbal history, many advanced civilizations preceded and indeed seeded the Greeks by thousands and thousands of years, and some of these cultures have continued into the modern times. These cultures shaped Greek culture at its core and ultimately us, and it is time we expand our understanding of herbal medicine to include these ancient cultures already mentioned above. Indeed, we need to look out into the entire world to understand our collective roots. Every culture that preceded the modern one through the world has a history involving plants. We all come from Africa originally. It's important to remember our roots as we've spread through the whole world and bring that into the issues, challenges, problems, and opportunities of today. Many of those relationships are relevant to today and to assist us in these challenges before us. I am not very knowledgeable of European herbal history. I look forward to knowing more in the years ahead. I look forward to visiting the Caucasus Mountains and Italy in the next couple of years, and I know that there is a strong history of phytotherapy alive and well in Europe. From my research, I unearthed that in the West, written records of the Sumerians, which was 4000 to 2000 BC, describes medicine uses of specific plants. Those are the earliest roots recorded. Greek and Roman herbal remedies were described by Hippocrates, 460 to 377 BC, and later Galen, 129 to 199 AD. According to Wilderness Medicine, Hippocrates was an advocate of using simple plant preparations along with fresh air, rest, proper diet to help the body's own life force to eliminate problems. Conversely, Galen promoted the use of direct intervention to correct imbalances that cause disease. The earliest European compendium of medicinal plants is De Materia Medica by Greek physician Dioscorides. He lived from 40 to 90 AD and described 600 plants, and his work remained the authoritative herbal reference into the 17th century. In 1860, Sertner, a German pharmacist isolated the alkaloids of opium, which began a quest to isolate more compounds through the 1800s and into the 1900s. In terms of Western culture and herbal medicine, most of my knowledge rests in the U.S. history, with a deeper exposure to the United Kingdom's history in the last year. So let me discuss the herbal medicine's history in the United States. People are believed to have come to the Americas from Siberia about 15,000 years ago over the Bering Strait. Upon arriving, they quickly traveled over both the North and South continents. They hunted to extinction many mammals and tended large areas of that land that the colonists thought were wilderness when they arrived. Read 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus, for updated details of this history. The Western herbal movement in the U.S. began with the Spanish explorations who arrived in the mid-1500s. They brought botanists and ethnographers who recorded the habits of the people, the native people who lived there. There was nearly an entire extinction of the native people upon contact with these Europeans from diseases they brought with them and with their animals. When the colonialists arrived, settling, quote-unquote, settling North America in the 1600s, you can read the cartoon history of the United States by Larry Gonick for many perspectives of how this all came to be. But in the 1600s, when the colonialists came, herbalists came with them, and some of them went native, becoming white cure doctors. One famous one was named Samuel Thompson, who created the Thompsonian School of Medicine that has that had over 3 million supporters by its peak in 1839. In world medicine, he is credited with being a pioneer in self-help medicine. In wilderness medicine, it can be quoted and seen to be said, they've quoted, before a professional medical class was established, most illnesses in America were treated within the family and the extended family network. Eventually, a couple of Thompsonians traveled back to England and reinvigorated the herbal medicine movement there. Read Simon Mills' Essential Book of Herbal Medicine for a good rendition of this story. Basically, the herbal tradition of England had been shattered as a consequence of the Industrial Revolution when people left the country with its forest and hedgerows to venture into the city. Ironically, these city dwellers then needed doctors. These Thompsonians arrived in time to help fill that need. To this day, roughly half of the English herbal apothecary is made up of North American herbs. Back in the States, the Eclectic School of Medicine opened, which sought to unite the Thompsonians, the allopathic doctors, and the traditional herbal medicine paths. In the early 1900s, things began to change when the newly created pharmaceutical companies funded the allopathic colleges and the newly founded American Medical Association, which is a private organization, began an attack campaign against other forms of health care. The government Flexner Report, funded by the Carnegie Foundation on Medical Education in 1910, emphasized allopathic principles and the modern pharmaceutical industry. This moved medicine in the U.S. to an almost total monopoly over the century, with synthetic drugs replacing herbal medicine, and surgery and radiation becoming the norm. By 1939, the last eclectic college closed, and the famous herbalist Michael Moore comments that the movement survived for a century, was famous for its vast plant materia medica, treated the patient and not the pathology, a sophisticated model of vitalistic healing. There were a few amazing exceptions that persisted, like Jethro Kloss's Back to Eden. You can read the book When Healing Becomes a Crime, and another book, The 100-Year Lie, for details around all this to understand what was going on in detail. Over 200 plants were listed in the U.S. Pharmacopoeia in 1936. Less than 40 of them remain to this day. Since the 1960s, there has been both an explosion of technology in biomedicine and, at the same time, an emergence of what anthropologist Morgan Brent calls a neo-indigenous revitalization movement. I will be drawing from this dissertation in the work ahead. Since the 1960s, there has been an explosion of technology in biomedicine and, at the same time, an emergence of what anthropologist Morgan Brent calls a neo-indigenous revitalization movement. I will be drawing from his dissertation in this work, as he has outlined well the details around the herbal movement in the U.S. of the last 100 years and its implications towards the future. This revitalization movement was initiated by the hippies looking to get back in connection with nature. Each of those who Morgan calls the spring herbalists describes an awakening time when they were guided and took on the work of sharing knowledge about the green plant beings. It started becoming profitable in the 1990s, and there has been a struggle ever since as to embrace the active constituent path or the whole plant path. Each way has its very different way of looking toward the future. That struggle continues to this day. As one of the well-known herbalists in Brent's work comments, we feel more connected when we are back to the heart connection of with the plants and animals. That's why I have so much trouble with herbs becoming something you go to a store and buy in a bottle. There's no nature connection there. Standardized herb is an oxymoron. Standardization is a marketplace creation issue. To me, potency does not come from the white coats and stainless steel, but from the relationship, the harvest, the connection. Brent lists 10 similarities that spring herbalists share with indigenous people that you can read from his dissertation. The green witch, Susan Weed, in her book Healing Wise, describes three traditions of healing that are present in Western society today. The scientific, trust my machine, the heroic, trust me, and the wise woman, trust yourself, are ways of thinking, not ways of acting. Any practice, any technique, any substance can be used by a practitioner helper in any of these traditions. The practitioner and the practice are different. The intent, the thought behind the technique points to the tradition. Scientific fixing, heroic elimination, wise woman digestion and integration. As the wise woman way becomes more clearly identified, it becomes the way to an integration, whole, sacred, peaceful global village, interactive with Gaia, Mother Earth. As each discipline spins anew its wise woman thread, we reweave the web of interconnectedness with all beings. As quoted from Susan Weed. Native American medicine. There are records of over 1,000 separate nations who have lived in the Americas. Hundreds are still alive and vibrant today. Each has its own approach to healing and its unique relationships with plants. Let me write of the North, Central, and South Americas separately. North America. Certain great and powerful medicines are very touchy. They cannot have anyone with the least bit of disbelief in them see them, nor can they speak of them to anyone who has this disbelief. Disbelief dilutes any medicine to the degree of the disbelief, as quoted from Ted Williams in his book, Big Medicine from Six Nations. So much turmoil has befallen the native peoples since Europeans first arrived here 500 years ago, bringing plagues, battles, and cultural genocide. Today, only remnants remain, and although rich, only hints at the societies that once ruled. It has been an exciting time these last 20 years in so many ways. A notable one is the theory of human origin that has shifted to focus on Africa instead of several parallel evolutions around the world. I was at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History in D.C. some years back and saw them actually taking down the old exhibit and putting up the new one. Another great example of how our understanding of history has changed is the notion of the Americas as a vast, untamed wilderness that has been dismissed in the face of knowledge around huge settlements and millions of people inhabiting this continent. My own education of the last 20 years has involved learning a lot of living Native American knowledge through my association with the Back to the Land movement that started in the 1970s called the Rainbow. And the Rainbow gatherings happen each year. And I was at one of these gatherings in 1994 that I met when on my first plant walk, which opened me to the true abundance of nature. Within these teachings, I not only met thousands of plants, but I've been trained in healing techniques such as sweat lodges, peace pipe ceremonies, medicine wheels, smudges, and vision quests. I have heard many stories of our origins and how to walk the red road of honorable living. Many of the plants I know in North America, which is about, there are about 17,000 species total, have Native American stories associated with them. Some plants that are well known from this continent include echinacea, sunflowers, pokeweed, white sage, which is a mint, sagebrush, which is a composite, osha, tobacco, yerba santa, slippery elm, grindelia, and oh, so many, many more. In addition to the books mentioned above, I recommend you reading Black Elk Speaks, Central American and Caribbean Healing Systems. My only exposure to Caribbean and Central American is on my three journeys to Costa Rica and along the Isthmus of Panama. And that's where I encountered, that's my only exposure to Central America, is going along the Isthmus of Panama and visiting through there. I've been there three times. And though interesting experiences, I cannot say that I have gone deep. I encountered rich, lush lands and much experimentation in organic production and permaculture. And I feel a birthing of the Aquarian Age happening there with a lot of people who've come from all over the world to live in Costa Rica. The local people of Hispanic descent, by and large, seemed really kind and peaceful to me. And I saw a few indigenous people around in the towns, but have not had any occasion in which I've been able to engage them or get to know who they are yet. And I'm sure from the half a dozen countries around there in Central America, some plants and healing techniques shall come forth into our global world knowledge. I am told there are some intact indigenous tribes in Panama and look forward to time with them when I travel down there this winter. After my next visit to Costa Rica, I'll be going through Panama and we'll have a chance to understand how intact the indigenous cultures are there. In the Caribbean Ocean, I've visited Jamaica, Dominica, and Puerto Rico. My two times there have dispelled any preconceptions I had about the Caribbean being only full of sunbathers. There are thousands of islands in the Caribbean, most having endemic plants. And in Jamaica and Dominica, I got a sense of thriving herbal cultures, especially from the Jamaican Bushmen and the Carib Indians. South America. I have made four journeys to Peru and one to Ecuador over the last 9 years. Each journey was filled with adventure and discovery. I see South America as an immense continent to learn from in the decades ahead. I cannot speak of that world in any continental way. I can convey some insights about Peru and the healing cultures there, which has two connected branches: the healers of the Andean Mountains and their Incan roots, and the Amazonian cultures with its tribal peoples. This is all mixed up with the dominant Hispanic culture and the smattering of Asian and Indian, as in India, influences. As a mirror of this, I think of my main teacher there, the ayahuasquero Don Juan Paima. His grandfather was Chinese, and on the walls of his healing hut hang posters of Mother Mary. Both cultures, the Andean and the Amazonian, have access to powerful and diverse foods, medicines, and sacraments. There is a growing awareness in the West of these worlds and their wonderful contributions to the modern world. Their food plants already encircle the world and feed it. Their medicines and healing ways have and will continue to do the same. The Amazon represents a place to feel the wild and abundance despite the onslaught upon it. In the jungle, you feel a different healing modality than in the urban centers of India or Europe. In wilderness, the plant spirits rule, and humans are clearly only one of the species amongst the multitude. We have much to learn from the Amazon and the South American continent. I recommend reading Wizard of the Upper Amazon and One River, two great books to begin the journey of understanding the richness of that world.